Hey, I'm Hendel Leyva, and welcome to the Immigration Mike podcast, where we take you through the journey and story of every guest and the personal reason why they're fighting for immigrants across the nation in their own way. Find all Immigration Mike interviews on Apple Podcasts now.
Ryan Little.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 97. 97. Of the Immigration Mike podcast. Today, we have a very groundbreaking, in a way, episode for you. Joining me today is my friend, fellow podcaster, and one-third of the up-and-coming Chica Chats podcast, Rocio Vives, in the studio today.
Hi, Ando. Hi, homie. How are you?
I'm good. We've spent like 6 hours already,
I think
we showed up at 4:30 and it's almost 9:30.
AKA, we have no life.
Speak for yourself. And in this time, like, you've been helping me edit my 99th episode. We've worked on the blueprint for our upcoming podcast workshop, The Confidence to Podcast, which we'll talk about a little bit. And I figured that because you were already going to be here, and because this episode of South Park in the season premiere was an episode that I really wanted to, I guess, deconstruct with someone else who likes South Park, I figured you'd be the perfect person.
You came to the right source. I've been watching South Park since I was like 12.
Yes. And so now you are going to be an alumni of the Immigration Mike podcast.
Woo! Episode 97. I've been initiated.
So I want to start with some good news. Some very, very good news.
Cuéntame.
Yesterday, it was like 9 o'clock. I was in bed. I was scrolling through Twitter. And I saw that Spider-Man is actually back in the MCU.
I'm taking a deep sigh of relief. The world makes sense again, yes.
After the end of Homecoming and the fact that Sony and Marvel had to go back and forth, and then hearing that Spider-Man might not be a part of the MCU, I felt personally attacked by Sony specifically.
I mean, our boy Wonder was taken away and was like, we don't know if he's coming back.
Right. And essentially, it was kind of like the end of Infinity War, right? I mean, it's essentially he got snapped away and all of a sudden he's back. So the reason why I say this is because we're both big Avengers fan.
Speak for yourself. I'm more of a DC.
Oh, God. All right. This podcast is over right now. But you like the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And from what I know, you're a comic book nerd. You really like Dragon Ball Z. So let's start out with that. Let's give you a chance to introduce yourself. Who is Rocio? Who am I speaking to for like that I've spoken to for like a year now?
So I'm your resident nerdy girl with a spicy twist. And by that I mean normally nerdy girls I see as like calm and docile. I'm definitely not. More like loud, outspoken with an opinion. Most of the time when I like share my opinion with other people that are in the nerdy world, they're like, oh wait, you really know your shit? I'm like, yeah, dude. I also consider myself as like a social commentary. I like to speak not just on opinion, but also like perhaps shed a light ongoing conversation regarding anything from like women's rights, trans rights, LGBTQ rights. I've never wanted to hold my tongue. And so I've made so far a little bit of a career on just like creating conversations that wouldn't have a platform otherwise.
And so how did we meet? Why don't you tell that story?
Oh, an origin story. So me and Hendel basically said hello to each other while basically volunteering our time with the podcast and kind of contributing with the podcast for the past almost a year now.
And this is the Latinos Out Loud podcast.
Where they've taken us on and we've grown as people become of it as well. Like 6 months in, me and a group of my girls, we developed our own podcast. Hendel's also been very instructive in that path as well. Kind of like we built a little bit, like a little bit of a Latinx community.
Well, instructive in the way that you told me to just send you notes and I shit it all over the first couple of episodes. And I was like, Rocio, don't get mad, but I'm going to give you full feedback. And you said, okay. And now, like I've said many times by this point, I'm very impressed with the quality. I'm very impressed with the content. And you three are making such an impression and you're rising fast. So I'm glad you let me shit all over you for that.
Well, thank you for shitting, because out of this shit,
we have burritos, by the way.
just yes. A warning. Fair warning, if you hear like silent noises, it may be someone else's silent noises. We basically would come together, these group of girls and I, my homegirl Kendi and Alex. We would have long-winded conversations about stuff we're going around. Literally, like, anything from, like, our periods, our dating life, self-help. And we were like, how do we monetize this, but not monetize it for consumption of, like, money? Because we saw a lot of people, like, making podcasts about, like, their lives and monetizing it and kind of reaping money. But we were like, no, these conversations are meant for something more. And what we've realized throughout our episodes is that we're causing conversation between the sexes, between communities that wouldn't otherwise have it, because they're listening and they're seeing a perspective. They're seeing not just the devil's advocate side, but they're seeing literally their enemy's perspective and like kind of adding more context to their conversations when they go home, whether it be with their loved ones or at work or with people they feel comfortable having these conversations. So I pride myself on, I'm surrounding myself with a strong group of women trying to lead the forum regarding social commentary, injustices and issues.
Yeah, and you guys are a little dangerous, I will say.
We're sassy.
I have to ask you though, what happened the night I bought that bottle of tequila?
Oh, Henda wants to take it back.
Well, this was only 2 months ago. Or 3 months ago.
The heartburn feels like it was way back. So we basically are kind of sassy when we record, in the sense of we kind of need liquid courage. And so most of the time we will be having wine or alcoholic beverage. And we were like, Hansel, come through, come listen.
And they were recording right by where I live, so.
Yeah, so it was convenient. And so homie Hansel shows up with a bottle of tequila. And you know it's bad when my Mexican co-host literally looks at me like, oh, it's about to go down. And I'm like, I don't know, is it? And then 30 minutes in, it went down.
It went down. I don't remember what happened. I just remember you guys had to drag me out of the studio.
Oh my God. The highlight was seeing three tiny petite women out drink Hendel and handle their own. And we still went out afterwards, so I felt accomplished. No, but I remember calling you and I'm like, how you feeling? Uh-huh. And it wasn't too great. And I was like, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, no, and I just remember, like, I got thrown into an Uber.
Thrown. Handheld.
Handheld. No, I'm pretty sure Kendi threw me. She clotheslined me and she threw me into an Uber. And then I woke up. But that's just kind of just give you a little taste of like what goes on.
Yes.
Behind the scenes. But we have something else behind the scenes too. Mm. So a couple of weeks ago, Rocio and I held our first workshop together. And this workshop, we called it The Confidence to Podcast. So kind of the story behind that is, a former guest of the podcast, Miluska Akihe, she is a pastor in residence. She wanted to host, you know, a workshop that talks about podcasting. And literally, I made this up 2 days beforehand. And so when we went to go present at the Fresh Oil Ministries, shout out to them for providing us with the location, I think we ended up with something special coming out of that workshop. What did you get from what we presented that day?
Well, step one, I didn't burst into flames.
Wow.
It was very weird. I literally go to Hendel. Hendel did not advise me beforehand who the religious nature of what we're doing. And I walk in and there's really like a cross behind me and I'm like, oh, you know, I might sizzle, heads up. And then
go check out Chica Chat's podcast.
Yes.
To understand why.
Yes. So yes, that happened. And then we kind of, the feeling felt really amazing. I remember feeling like kind of nervous up to the point of presenting. But the work that you put into this presentation, the work that Milagros...
Which was literally 2 hours. But go ahead.
But it felt, you know, well done. Milagros' work as far as getting it together felt really great. And thank you to Milagros. Like, she made it happen in such a short amount of time. Even the space, I was, like, so thankful. It felt good also to connect with people that want to find their voice. Like, what I've taken from podcasting is being able to find my voice, empower myself through my voice. And seeing other people trying to navigate that conversation for themselves and kind of interpreting what we're presenting in front of them to see how they can implement it in their lives was amazing.
I think for me, the most powerful moment was watching you speak and really giving a sense of inspiration to the room. Specifically when you were saying about how you're a brown woman, unapologetically, how you're funny, unapologetically, and I think that's important for what you want to do in your career, but then also talking to people about how podcasting is your step one and how you hoped that that workshop was their step one. And to me, you wrapped that up so amazingly. I was in the back and I wanted to slam the table and say yes. Like, that's incredible. So that's what I got from it.
I mean, that step-by-step process was given to me by someone close to me.
So it's plagiarized.
It is plagiarized. It has not been basically insured. But thank you for that. This conversation started off with me 2 years ago, where I found myself in a place where, like, I felt like I had lost my voice during a series of events. And I had reached out to someone very close to me who was successful somewhat in their career. And I had asked for advice regarding how to go about being successful in the career that I wanted to endeavor. And this person's best advice I've heard so far has been break down your dreams. Anything is honestly, it sounds really corny. People think like anything is possible, but it's not just like anything is possible. It's like you can make it happen if you just figure out what's step one. Like, you can't become a singer if you don't practice, right? You can't become a soccer player unless you pick up a soccer ball. Like, that's step one. Just like you can't podcast unless you start thinking, like, what's my step one? My step one is, like, what do I want to say? And that sounds really stupid. It's like, why is that so important? I'm like, because if you think about, if you want to dream about being an executive, you don't think about, like, oh, how much am I want to make money? You think about, what school do I need to go to? What type of CEO do I want to be? And so step one is what I wanted to really carry with the people with our workshop, if we continue doing it, is how to, like, make it accessible and make it possible. Because I feel like people dream all day, but people don't break it down.
Yeah, and I think I appreciated something you said earlier about how the call and response exercise that I did was impactful. What can you say about that kind of, like, moment of empowerment in that kind of workshop?
So Hendo got up on the stage and
it wasn't the stage. I don't know what you're thinking about.
AKA the podium. And basically decided to be Oprah for like 20 minutes and basically allow the audience to close their eyes and immerse themselves in the possibility of just even thinking what would it be like to hear themselves. I think the power of being able to hear your own voice back is essential in anything. And it was magical to see these people close their eyes thinking, like, what am I doing? Why is this strange man telling me to close my eyes and put my hands on my chest? And by the end of it, they literally took a deep breath to the possible reality of, like, oh, I can do this. It's not that hard. You basically took the step that I mentioned and kind of visualized it for them.
So you see, this is why I love working with Rocio, because number one, she just shows up out of nowhere. And I appreciate her being able to give her energy to this work. But then also because she provides a different perspective, which, you know, sometimes in podcasting, when you do it by yourself, you don't really see the power of what you're doing. And there's one compliment that she gave me a while back that I really appreciated. She said that she sees me as a cross between Captain America and Iron Man.
When did I say that?
All right, maybe you were drunk. But I remember you said that. You don't remember after the YouTube event, we were sitting down, we were talking about Marvel characters.
I may have had a beer. Well, I think of you, I do see both qualities. I see Iron Man being like a logical man, and I see Captain America having a passion for his country and his people. And I think
I like that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
They do.
Take the compliment, Hendo.
But I mean, I think this is kind of like a great preview as to what we're going to talk about with South Park later, you know, kind of infusing pop culture into this podcast. And I'm really excited that we're here with professional equipment because you're the first person to sit across me with professional equipment, like both of us, and I'm on Skype. So it's nice quality for you to hear. We are planning a follow-up to the Confidence to podcast sometime in December in New York City. We're working those details out, but hopefully that event can help launch us to other platforms and maybe we can go do workshops out of state because as Rocio said, our goal is to make podcasting accessible and to be able to inspire people to take that first step. So, you know, if you're listening, you know, just start thinking, how can we come to your state or city in the future? But yeah, that's kind of my introduction into, that's kind of our introduction into today's episode. So Rocio, let's talk about immigration and how immigration has been a part of your life. I know that there is a very rich history of immigration and it has to do with your parents and some of their recent stories. So why don't you take me from the beginning as to what you want to talk about?
The origin story. As far as immigration, my parents are both Colombian. Mm-hmm. Both came to this country older in life. Both very different methods. My dad came under the premise of the 70s in the hopes of like seeing the air of New York in that air time and being very illusioned by that. My mom came in the hopes of like actually working and kind of prospering. Both of the journeys very different. I've seen both positive and negative things. I've seen my mom during her process when she was putting in her papers for residency, going through a difficult time and not being able to travel out of the country, even though she kind of had like a family emergency. And I was still so young and seeing her distress and being her being upset at the fact the way the laws work, that God forbid if you're going through the paperwork, you're unable to leave the country. Mm-hmm. No matter in her particular case, she had like a family passing and seeing her distress and also dealing with the fact like I'm an American child. And not that I was like another reason why my mom wanted to be a resident, but because like she knew her choice was either to leave the country and not be able to come back or to stay and finish out the paperwork.
Actually, I think this was one of the recent stories on the podcast. Zule's parents, I believe she was the episode before this, had to go take care of the grandma. And then they made the decision where they stayed. Mm-hmm. And that was more recent. But, you know, it's a recurring theme for sure.
Yeah, and it just speaks on the fact, this was in the 70s too, mm-hmm. 70s, 80s. This just speaks to the fact of like how dated and how disconnected mm-hmm. the laws are to the reality of how it actually works for people. I wonder the possibility if these laws were actually written and done for the people that are actually migrating into this mm-hmm. country. But if there was a little bit more understanding about the process, especially when it comes to money. So it kind of serves as money is one of the reasons why people are unable to go ahead with the paperwork and seeing the paperwork as possible deterrent from them going on and fulfilling their journey as an American, their dreams. Money, I feel like, is one of the biggest obstacles. Also time. Also, these people have, you know, 10-hour days sometimes working for like minimum wage. And it's like, how can this process be more for the people? Because at the end of the day, these people are benefiting our country. Mm-hmm. They're providing our country's sustainability.
So talk to me, because you mentioned some of your mom's story. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about your dad's story and how, with what you're saying, how that contributes to his story.
So my dad basically came to this country, didn't know anyone, mm-hmm. and ended up on a stranger's door. And this person took them in. And till this day, this person is a lifelong family friend. Mm-hmm. And because this one person decided to take upon themselves and help my father out and do these series of events, my dad basically is now basically a citizen. Like, my parents are now both citizens. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for these helping people that decided to take it upon themselves and help them out, they would not have ended up here mm-hmm. all these years later. And the thing is, not everybody has someone to help them. Right. Not everybody has family. Not everybody has the accessibility to be helped. And so I wonder what would happen if there was more help, not just financial help, but like emotional help. It's the whole situation could be very distressing on anyone.
So talk to me about, you told me a little bit about the reasons why your parents decided to become citizens mm-hmm. After being permanent residents. Mm-hmm. What was that decision? What was that motivated by?
So my parents are avid people seekers of truth. And so they're always looking at the news, asking questions. So we kind of realized when Trump was elected, things were going to change drastically. And so my parents, during the election time, decided to start the process of becoming citizens because they really saw that things were about to change drastically. And they still had not become citizens. Also, the idea of retiring and not being a citizen, the benefits that someone gets besides from being a resident and being a citizen are very different. And luckily, my parents were able to become citizens before Trump was elected. And the sigh of relief that it happened. But it's also unfortunate that you feel like you have to fast forward this process. I can only imagine what it's like now for people to become citizens. Again, my parents were able to take the tests in Spanish. Financially, it was better off for them, too, because they were stable financially. But 20 years ago, they would not be able to have taken that test and be ready for it either, because it would have been done in English and it would have been more expensive for them.
So this is a question I ask in every episode. What was 2016 like for you during that time, election season?
For me, it was really interesting because I have the pleasure of having someone in my family that works in news. So I kind of felt like I had someone in the in that was giving me like unbiased opinion on what was going on. I remember going to sleep and thinking like, oh, you know, things seem grim, but like it's going to work in the favor. And by favor, I mean Trump is going to lose. And waking up the next day, I don't think I felt more afraid in my adult life. Like, as a woman, like, my ovaries might as well have, like, shrunk up and started screaming.
Oh, boy, those famous ovaries you talked about. they had to make an appearance here in the podcast, didn't they?
They always do. So, yeah, I woke up and my ovaries were like, something's not okay. Mm-hmm. And it was the fact that Hillary wasn't elected.
But wait, did you really feel that in your ovaries? Like, is that what you're saying?
No, I might as well have. Okay. I might as well have. Women were very in tune with each other. Right. And having, feeling like what's going to happen next. It was the first time as an adult feeling like, I don't know what's going to happen next. Mm. And also I'm a big nerd. So my first thing was like, is it the end of the world? No, I felt afraid. I would be afraid. I didn't know what to tell the younger kids in my family. Cause they were like, what's going to happen? I was like, I don't know.
So what was that conversation like?
It was different because, it was weird. It was weird because, there was like a shift in society that I felt. Regarding not just women, but I was worried I have LGBTQ people in my life as well. What would happen to them? Being a brown woman, I'm like, what's going to happen to the rest of my members of the family who are young brown women, young brown men coming up? What's going to happen to them? Because I feel like when such a drastic like shift happens politically, the first people to feel it are children. You feel it all the way down into like the bullying. Mm-hmm. Like bullying no longer becomes stereotypes. It becomes like, oh, no, you're this because of this. It seeps into, like, society in that way.
And so where do you think we are in 2019, almost 3 years later?
I honestly think the way that I see it is I think people feel anger on many different directions. Some people are angry about the state of the country. I think everyone's kind of mad in some way about the state of the country. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of indifference. I think there's a lack of empathy. I think there's an obvious tone of disconnection regarding conversation. Nobody's talking to each other. We're connected to our electronics all the time. We're looking at news all the time. Because if you're looking at social media, you're getting updates about what's going on in the world in some way. Mm. But we're disconnecting from each other. Mm. You no longer see your neighbor as a neighbor, which is really difficult. I never thought as an American, as growing up American, that my neighbor would no longer be my neighbor. So, yeah. So I grew up in a time where, like, John McCain would talk to Bill Clinton and vice versa. Mm. And compromise would come to an understanding. I think after Obama, even during Obama's time, I saw like a shift where like people weren't talking to each other or people were kind of denigrating each other because of their political views. Mm. And now it's like at the end of the day, like within your family, you can have Republicans, you can have liberals, you can have Democrats, you can have independents. That hasn't changed. The only thing is now like we're seeing each other very indifferently.
Mm. Well, I think this is a good moment to transition into the review of the South Park episode.
Yay!
Mexican Joker. I guess to preface this, I put the episode on and I was really taken with how the creators went all in on this particular episode on immigration. Now, what I'll say about South Park is that...
Wait, you mean the same people that make jokes about balls? You thought they couldn't, you know, make something happen socially? Balls matter.
Well, Well, I guess let's, before we get into it, you know, just to give context, I grew up with South Park being something that my mom didn't want me to watch.
Fascinating.
She called it sick and evil. It was the same thing as Beavis and Butthead. It was the same thing as Celebrity Deathmatch.
All my favorite stuff.
It was the same as Eminem. So, but eventually, so that's what I thought about South Park, you know? But eventually, you know, when I was in middle school, I started watching and I just ended up laughing. And I think ever since then, like, the social commentary, how timely it is, and also just the humor in it, like, I am an avid fan of South Park. How about you?
I had the opposite effect in my household. We, cursing the middle finger is a sign of endearment. Like, the middle finger is a sign of endearment. So, like...
You're lucky.
I know. Like, my parents, you see my parents, like, flipping themselves off, like, to each other.
You are so lucky.
I know.
My parents would never...
Oh, my God, it's hysterical. I grew up as the South Park being like the muñequitos sucios or the muñequitos que son plebe, which in basically translates to like the cartoons that curse. And my mom would hysterically laugh all the time. And she would let me watch like South Park, Celebrity Deathmatch, Beavis and Butthead, like all those shows, like that was what I would watch at night. And I'm thankful. And my dad also put me onto like a lot of comedy. Like I grew up watching like Monty Python. I grew up watching a lot of like stand up, Johnny Carson, things like that. So for me, like comedy was always like aligned for society, but also for social commentary. Like I never saw comedy not being momentous or influential. I always thought comedy is like the perfect way to talk about what's going on in the world.
Yeah, no. And I think so. That's kind of like the perfect segue into like our actual review. Where should we start? Oh, hey, fuck you, my integrity. Did I do it right?
Why do you sound like George Lopez?
Hendo? Do I?
You kind of do. I was like, is George Lopez in the room?
Yeah, cheater. This my pop part.
Oh, my God. No? I can't.
Okay, I guess I'm not good at impressions.
I'm
going
to have dreams about that. Thank you. So I don't know if you noticed, Hendo, but at the beginning of the episode, Cartman starts off by talking about literally listing reasons why the generation coming up feels hopeless and has no faith in what's coming up. How did you feel about that?
I think it speaks to this association we've had to have with our day-to-day lives after the 2016 election. I think that there's, like you were talking about, the apathy in America, the apathy in our country, because we are living in times where just the pillars of democracy are being demolished day by day. So I can identify with, you know, kind of like that day-to-day apathy of, you know, I guess hopelessness. What about you?
For me, it made me think about the younger people. What are we leaving for them to pick up? I mean, I remember growing up and feeling like, oh, the world, I felt optimistic. I'm like, I could do this with my life. The fact that they have to worry about like climate change, immigration, women's rights, trans LGBTQ rights, like they have that on their shoulders. Like it seems like they have to like recalibrate American society as we know it.
So the premise of the show, how it opened, was that Randy Marsh is growing all this weed, and he's the only supplier in town. And as he starts to see competition from his neighbors who want to do it themselves, he gets angry and wants to do something about it. And what he did was he called ICE as retaliation, and getting one of his neighbors sent to a detention center.
Okay.
And from that, Cartman sees this, and he essentially tells Kyle to apologize or something bad's going to happen. And Kyle says, fuck you, man. And then Cartman calls ICE on the Bruslowskis. And this was the scene where you saw ICE come and take his dad, his mom, his little brother. Remember, they're Canadian, into ICE vans. But you said that struck you for some reason. Do you want to talk about that?
I mean, for me, what struck was it was the... Animation's always been... for me, a great way for people to convey emotions. And I think what they captured was the stress that a family would go through for separation. I think people see it in the news sometimes and they feel like it's oversaturated. Something about seeing, whether it be a brown person or immigrant in general, being handcuffed nowadays on the news is like a normal thing.
Right.
But seeing these beloved characters that I grew up watching and laughing and finding funny, being handcuffed, and this family that I knew since I was like 12, mm-hmm. Being separated was like, what is going on? What, it's happening even in South Park.
I think so. I think that's very much the power. I mean, I think in this line of work, like, you know, you scroll through Twitter and like every other post is about someone being handcuffed. So I think for that same reason, that scene was powerful to me because it provoked emotions because it was in a different format. And, you know, as much as, you know, I truly appreciated, you know, the Congress people that went down to the detention centers, somehow this struck me more.
Mm.
And I think for that reason, because, yeah.
I would give an example. I'm like, imagine Sandy from SpongeBob. Mm-hmm. She was a human from the sea above. Like, she was a human from land. Imagine she would have been deported from the sea.
Right.
And she had to leave her home that she cultivated with her own air, with her own land. Like, how would that feel like?
I guess one thing that I got from the scene where they're arriving to the detention center and the translator kind of like trying to give them instructions like, hola, my name is Jeff.
Or, oh my God, reminded me of my ESL teacher.
But I think what's interesting about that is there was such a disconnect between what they were trying to convey to the kids mm-hmm. arriving at the detention center and what they were actually trying to say. And to me, that represents a disconnect between like the actual issue, between like the American policies and the people that they're administering to.
For me, what it made me realize, it brought me back to when you mentioned AOC and the Congress people, mm-hmm. different Congress people that went to actually visit these detention camps.
So hard to say detention.
I know. I think it's like the PTSD for me being like in fourth grade, getting a lot of detention. So basically seeing them be in distress and feeling like these are inhumane conditions and it not translating to the rest of society. I think there's same thing for me. I think if you can, nowadays, if you can pinpoint the correlation of what happened even after 9/11, how we treated prisoners that were prisoners of accused of terrorism and how we waterboarded them, we tortured them. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what did we find? Very little information. Like, we didn't end up finding, but there's a whole group of people that have been, their lives have been ultimately destroyed mm-hmm. from this and were set free into society. We're now passing it on through immigration. There's a whole generation of women, men, and children that have now the view of America as seeing as terror again. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, I feel like a few years ago, we basically saw as America as an example for morality. Mm-hmm. And I think people are sacrificing their morals under the umbrella of, like, we're doing for the better good of society. It's going to affect our country greatly. Our jobs are going to be safe. And they're being sold this propaganda that, like, these people aren't human. Like, if you call someone an alien, they're no longer human. They're other. And how that's translating into now how we treat, even how we treat our prisoners. How we treat our prisoners is another example of how we're dehumanizing people.
Mm. Mass incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the next scene that I want to talk about is the one where the ICE agents are reading out people's names and they come to the last name Barflosky.
Mm.
And they ask, and Kyle says here, and then the ICE agents are like, are you supposed to be here? What kind of a El Salvadorian name is that? And to me, it was hilarious how at that moment they were like, oh no, we have to let him go or else they're going to think we're racist. But then the other kids, our skin color, Latino, started saying like, yeah, someone put me in here too, just because like, but they were speaking in English accents.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, that's such a poignant point, just because one of my guests a couple of episodes ago, Gosia Labno, she is Polish and she's a DACA recipient.
Mm-hmm.
And she made the point, she does have a certain kind of privilege where people aren't going to single her out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's one person I thought of when they called out Broflosky and they were like, oh no, like, we have to get him out of here or else they're going to think we're racist.
I feel like, unfortunately, it's a part of American history. We like to condemn people. I mean, we condemn people of color during slavery. Or you condemn people of color now because now immigration is brown.
Mm-hmm.
We condemn people during terrorism if you were a Muslim because your last name, if you prayed to Allah, you were a terrorist. Like, mm-hmm. we keep on putting the light on people that we shouldn't instead of thinking about the bigger picture. Like, I don't think this immigration is just for brown people, obviously. I mean, the perfect example is your guest. Your guest is a Polish, probably looks white person from the mm-hmm. outside. You never think she's a DACA recipient. But because we're being sold on this image that immigration is brown, immigration is Spanish, immigration is foreign, immigration is alien, we're not making the connection of like, wait, just people speaking. Like, even if they didn't speak English, why would that matter? These people are still people. Why are they being held in cages? Why are they being separated from their families?
And I guess to that point, like, I mean, a lot has been said about Italian immigrants when they first came here, Polish immigrants, Jewish people. And it's, to me, it's the homogenization of what white is in America. It's so interesting that, like, a lot of the, you know, and I'm generalizing here, but some of these kids from these white populations are adopting Make America Great Again and that kind of ideology with a similar kind of story in their background as what people are going through today.
I mean, just to add on a little bit to that point, I know brown people that are Trump supporters and are conservative. And I think for them is more of an assimilation of that's their idea of power. That's their idea of success. That's their idea of being, you know, at the top. Unfortunately, I think also when it comes to that point of view, I think also a lot of conservatives also are not Trump supporters, but they're stuck in this space of like, I have conservative beliefs, but then this is my only option. There's not enough options either. I think, unfortunately, the conservative party no longer looks like the conservative party of the Reagans anymore. It's completely radicalized and extremized.
Yeah. No. I think you have a lot more tolerance. But I appreciate it, for sure. Reaching across the aisle, I think, is important. I think during this time, it's hard to see that, but I definitely appreciate, you know, your viewpoint on that.
It's what I do. I mean, even when it comes to, like, when I have conversations about LGBTQ rights, I have to talk to the guy that thinks that the gay man next to him is inhuman. When I talk to the guy who's machismo and thinks that women are less than, I have to talk to him because I have to understand where he's coming from in order for me to be able to be of service and be like, no, hey, I'm an example of something that's different.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I think we come from, we have certain background in that mediation, for sure. Let's talk about the Mexican Joker.
Oh my, my favorite part as a nerd. I was like, yes, finally someone uses a Joker as like a symbolism for like the underdog, as he always should be.
So talk to me about the Mexican Joker and what you saw in this episode.
Okay, so I saw many things. The Joker for me personally has always been a symbolism for rage. A rage that, if cultivated, can cause greater harm. And in very different iterations of the story of the Joker, you'll see that the Joker starts off as someone who just wants to be loved and be found funny. And he continually is rejected by society, by those his mother and everyone around him. And that behavior being denied and dehumanized causes a chasm that leads them to basically find anger and want to cause chaos within society. He basically sees himself like, I'm so angry, I want to make everybody else feel this way that I'm feeling. So in the episode, I was like, yes.
So in terms of, you know, when they said one of these kids could grow up to be the Mexican Joker, what did you think of that?
I thought for chaos and chasm, I always think there's an action to a consequence. There's nothing good doesn't happen without bad. Wars don't leave casualties. Like, wars have casualties. What we're seeing this happen on society is going to be a casualty coming soon. Like, there's a whole, again, there's literally kids that are being affected by this that are going to grow up into adults and carry this pain with them. I believe that hurt people hurt people. I don't also like feel anger towards the people that are implementing. Like, I can only imagine what's going on in the minds of those officers that are implementing these laws in these detention centers. Like, how do they feel? What's going to cause them that when they go home? They have families, they have kids, you know, that all has like a karmic effect. Again, like, rage can cause some more rage. Like, there's a reason why we're having so many shootings. There's a reason why people are fighting with each other. There's a reason why people are calling each other slurs in the street and recording and posting it. There's a reason why we have cancel culture. I think all of this is a chasm from the anger that's being filtered through, whether it be mass incarceration or deportation or the dehumanization of LGBTQ people or the removal of women's birthrights.
So one of the things I found interesting about the Mexican Joker was that this brought the element of the flashback. To just bring that element into this episode, for this was interesting because they were already anticipating consequences of what they were doing. And they tried to mitigate that. What can you say, what did you see in terms of like the panic and like how they were trying to mitigate that afterwards?
Wow. The scene before it depicts a rape scene. And it depicts the act of the Joker raping a princess in front of these children. And what I took from it was submission. These children are being taught in this particular instance of this episode to submit to what this government that is controlling, you know, their well-being, their parents, what they eat, if they're going to leave, submitting to it, using that as a tool. For me, whenever I see rape as a tool for education, it's always seen as an act of violence. And then seeing how these ICE agents were completely disconnected from these children and kind of like wanting to like brainwash into believing like, if you only think this way, it's going to be better for you. If you only, you know, change your mind, this will be better for you. When the reality is, at the end of the day, they're still going to be sitting in this cage or they're still going to be sitting in this detention center and still going to be going through it. Mm-hmm.
I think after that, we got one of the biggest surprises of the episode was when there was a second bus of newly detained children arriving to the center and Cartman showed up.
Oh my God, that chubby, chubby little asshole.
I was so surprised to see him show up and he walked up to Kyle and he was just like, "What's up, Kyle?"
By the way, he's my mom's favorite character, which I find so funny. I'm like, "Mom, why do you find a little chubby character in like a red parka coat funny?"
And kind of a genocidal, homicidal character.
I know. He's definitely like the little Hitler of the child park. Yeah.
So I thought it was interesting that Cartman was there because I think Jimmy had said something. And then like Cartman told Jimmy that he was going to call ICE on Jimmy. But then like just like he did to Kyle. And then Stan heard that Cartman had done it. So then Stan called ICE on Cartman. So essentially, they're calling ICE on each other like it's a game, right? But I think, to me, it was a little bit... I saw the serious subtext in it because this is what a lot of kids joke about in elementary school. I know it's what I've joked about in elementary school, and I've been very open with that about, you know, my history on Long Island and, you know, engaging in this kind of behavior, you know, when I was younger. But also, there are serious consequences to undocumented workers in the labor force who are exploited and essentially blackmailed by their employers, telling them either you take these working conditions or I'm going to call ICE on you. What do you see in that?
I mean, I understand the running joke. I feel like it's been a running stereotype for a very long time. How if you're brown, you run the risk. Like, it's been definitely an inside stereotype and a joke. I think in this instance, also, if you realize a lot of the people that were working the agriculture for the weed plants were also brown people.
Yes.
There's not a single white person working those plants. So it kind of brought into perspective of for me, it made me think of like, that's why it was like so gut-wrenching, because I'm like, these people are constantly living on the edge. They're constantly living on the fact that, like, they say something wrong, if they do something wrong. Kind of like slavery. Like, if you said something wrong, if you acted something wrong, you can literally, your child could be sold, you could be separated, and then you would have no existence on this land. And you would never have been, like, you were not a factor. And so what I'm seeing in that scene that I feel like a lot of people are feeling that have gone through that experience is how insignificant they feel, how quick their life could be pulled from under the rug. And even then, they're still willing to risk their entire livelihood to go on that journey again.
And the scene that follows that, I think, is kind of the progression of the arc of the story. And this is where Cartman begins to realize the correlation between what he had done to Kyle and kind of Kyle's history.
You mean like he's realized his white privilege? He's like...
No, more so Kyle's history of being Jewish.
Ah, yes. Yes.
Now, I know that was an important moment for you. Talk to me about what that meant.
One of two things. I think it reminded me of the conversations that I've been having with a lot of people that are supportive of what's going on with immigration. Now, what I realize is that these are not bad people. These are people that are being sold an idea that this works. For some reason, they really believe that this works. The dehumanization of a whole generation of people works for them. And it's because they're being sold this propaganda of like, we're infringing on your jobs. It's gonna affect. It's an emergency. It's dire need. These are rapists. These are people who are causing harm onto this country. They're believing this is propaganda. It's not just white people. It's people of color as well. When I've had literally a conversation with people that don't really have a connection with immigration and how it directly affected them, same effect when you have someone who doesn't have an LGBTQ person in their lives. Mm. When you explain to them what is it like for someone to wake up day by day and live about their lives, it humanizes it for them. You'll literally see like the spark open in their eyes. Like I remember having a conversation with a conservative regarding like women's rights and seeing this person's motors work and change at the idea of like, oh, I get it from a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're missing. I think this implementation of immigration, it's what it's missing is like, and the reason why it's thriving is because no one's talking to each other. Mm-hmm. No one's humanizing the issue.
I thought it was interesting that the episode opened with a different theme song. It was more about like Tegrity Weed, right? And yeah. Like we're talking about how Randy is essentially talking about how weed is being sold with mm-hmm. integrity, right? Mm-hmm. I think I made a connection between the integrity in the production of weed, but also the integrity of immigration laws being carried out in the episode, right? Mm. So in that connection, as we see throughout the episode, Randy starts to lose that integrity. And essentially, it ends up in him committing domestic terrorism.
Because he's desperate, because he's losing his job, he's not making enough money anymore, and he feels like he has to survive.
Yeah, and then you see he planted bombs in all these weed gardens and killed people, right?
He basically Breaking Bad it for all those Breaking Bad fans.
Yeah, but I'm looking at it a little closer. I'm looking at it more like what the problem of white domestic terrorism.
Interesting, okay.
Because who was going to think Randy Marsh was the one committing domestic terrorism, blowing up the neighborhood. And the next day, if you remember, on the news, they have a picture, a sketch of Mexican Joker. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's kind of just kind of how like these domestic terrorists are handcuffed and just led into a police car. And so, yeah, so I think white nationalism definitely plays a role in this episode. And so, you know, just kind of starting to wind down, you know, getting close to the end of, you know, the South Park episode. There's a scene where Kyle and Cartman are converting all of the children to Judaism.
As Jesus Christ would like it to be so.
And what I saw, or what I interpreted from that scene was that in the beginning, we saw that Kyle was potentially going to be set free because he was Jewish and they didn't want, you know, to seem racist. So to me, it was strategic to make everybody a Jew and therefore they'd have the same privilege or benefits. But what we see is that the ICE agents show up, they're panicking, they're talking again about Mexican Joker, and one of the ICE agents shoots the other two, right? He murders them. And he says, kids, just remember the person that set you free in the future, you know, if any of you are Mexican Joker, it's me, right? I set you free. And to me, it showed kind of how we're so unwilling to work on finding common sense solutions to immigration policies that either the government, this administration, or people resort to the most extreme solutions, right? Because that security guard, that ICE agent, didn't have to shoot his colleagues in order to escape the fear of Mexican Joker. There was a common sense way to go about it without murdering people. And to me, that just exemplifies kind of like this like manic hysteria where we can't get to solutions.
I mean, that's a lot to unpack. I mean, from my perspective, what I took from that scene was how propaganda, how if you allow someone to have the wrong narrative and carry out those instructions, what that could lead to. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it took me back to when, like, AOC was talking on camera about what she saw in the detention camp and how she felt her own well-being was being threatened. Now, she's a congresswoman, and she went into detention, and she felt like she was in danger. I can only imagine having to leave those children in the care of those people, what it made her feel like. And so I think what we're seeing, and we've seen with this administration, is allowing the use of power translating into use of aggressiveness, mm-hmm. The use of violence, and how that's a way better way of going about and solving our problems. Mm-hmm. It's a very caveman, in my perspective, ideology. And it happens because we're not sharing ideas. We're not contributing. We're not conversating. Again, if you don't know your neighbor, then you're not going to care about your neighbor. If you don't talk to that child, if you don't ask that child how she or he is feeling, if you put a number on her shirt, that's all she's going to be for you. There's a reason why during the Nazi times they put numbers on people. Mm-hmm. Just like there's a reason now those children have numbers. They don't matter to these people. You're dehumanizing people. There's a psychological effect that happens to someone when, especially for women, like think about the women when we had no rights. People didn't think we were capable of making our own decisions. We weren't capable of handling money. Why? Because I have a boob and a butt. That makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Same way as like black people weren't allowed to vote because they didn't think they were smart enough to make an educated decision about what they wanted in their country. It's the complete underestimation and dehumanization of people. If we continue to see people as insignificant and less than, we're never going to understand each other. And unfortunately, in this episode, it hits so home because every single day if this continues to happen, society's morally goes down a whirlwind of epic proportions that coming back from, unfortunately, the next generation, like Cartman said, feels that way because they have so much more to push forward against.
Well, I mean, I think that sounds like a great way to wrap up. Mm-hmm. I think the very last thought I'll give is that, again, back to the metaphor of the most extreme solution. And I think we saw it play out when half of America voted. And it was the most extreme solution. And we've lived 3 years of it. But, I mean, we're here still pushing these narratives out. So
I will leave with this mm-hmm. little bit of hope. I will say throughout history, if you read what's happened, especially in American society, what this environment does cultivate is creative like us, people that want to shine a light on people that don't have one otherwise. What it does create is a chasm, both negative and positive. There's a group of
people. You like that word, chasm.
I do like chasm. I like chaos. What I hope is that we'll see a renaissance of things to come that is going to fight against. I mean, there will always be rebels. Mm. We're always people fighting against the grain. And I hope that the next generation leads with that foot rather than of compliance and rather of like just following the path that's before them instead of making, you know, make their own path, make their own choices. Hopefully they'll be invested more in politics. It looks like they really are. They're really invested in their social issues. So I think that's things to hope for.
So Rocio, it's been a pleasure.
Same, Handel. Thank you for having me.
Having you on the Immigration Mike podcast. Tell everybody where they can find you.
So you can find me on Chica Chats, on Spotify and iTunes, and on Instagram. You can also hit me up on my personal Instagram,
which is
Panda Munchies.
Wait, but it's like Panda Munchies and then like an underscore, right?
Yes, Panda Munchies underscore.
Well, another time we'll talk about how you got that.
I mean, we can unpack.
And you can find me at Handel on the Mic. Such a cool username.
Oh, God. Cringe.
And then at Immigration Mike Podcast, where you can see audiograms of all the episodes we've done with all the guests as we move closer to the 100th episode of the Immigration Mike Podcast. Just give you a little preview. Episode 98 will most likely be a live event from Old Westbury on Long Island. Episode 99, mm-hmm. It is potentially going to be a bombshell.
Woo!
So that's something to look forward to. And then our 100th episode celebration at Hofstra University, November 13th. I'm going to be there. I'm going to have a conversation with the Vice Dean of Communications, Mario Murillo, on the state of podcasting and podcasting as a cultural function. Our featured guest is going to be Eliana Fernandez, a DACA recipient that I personally mentored and went on to do amazing things. And she will be coming from the DACA case being heard at the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. So she'll be there the day after. and Daniela Vieira, who was part of the Grammy Award-winning album American Dreamers, will be on hand to perform and to be interviewed for a second time. So remember, Hofstra University, November 13th, it is an event where I hope to bring together podcasters and leaders across the nonprofit sector to network and see what we can build out there on Long Island. Because New York City has a podcasting game on lock, LA has the podcasting game on lock, and being from Long Island, I love where I come from, and we're going to do the same thing. Any final thoughts for you?
Hendel, you never sounded more like a Guido than you do now.
You said like a Guido?
Yeah, you were like repping Long Island real hard.
GTL, baby, you know what it is.
And then also Hofstra, you know, professors, you might want to give your students the night off. You know, maybe let them skip the evening class so they can come through and watch the 100th episode.
And hang out with Panda Munchies, apparently. She'll be there.
You know what? I will be there. My munchies will be there. My ears will be, I'll be present.
All right, let's fight that, Rocio. All right, thank you. Bye.
Bye.